Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99 cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
The expression from the music inspired me so much to take risks, and it inspired damn near the whole rap game.
Hello again, I'm Adam Unz. You may know me as the host of The Opus, and now I'm bringing my own show, The Spark Parade, to the Consequence Podcast Network. I speak with artists and creatives about the cultural artifacts that spark their personal interest and creativity, whether it's music, books, movies, video games, or any other kind of art.
I've never spoke about it in this amount of detail. I'm suddenly going, oh my God, I'm blowing my own mind here, Bryce. It's actually a giant part of my life.
By talking about the things we love, we share and discover insights into our personality and the things that drive us.
It's just magic, really. I mean, frustrating. And it makes some people angry, but I don't think anyone's ever done anything like it.
I speak with people like Connor Oberst, Phoenix's Thomas Mars, Chris Gethard, Helen Hong, Adrian Young, and more, so their sparks of inspiration can start a fire in you.
I'm grateful for those who continue to put our history and who we are as a people in the forefront and make you see it.
Find the Spark Parade wherever you get your podcasts.
Billy Amendola here this week again for the Modern Drummer Podcast. This week we have the one and only Ed Tout from the Doobie Brothers. Hello, Ed.
How's it going?
It's going, man. I know it's you're busy. You're out on the road, right? You're in Texas today. And
yeah, I'm in Dallas, Texas, and the wonderful hotel room curtains right behind me. And yeah, we play here tomorrow, and there's not too much left, just a couple of weeks. I think five shows left. So Dallas, Houston, New Orleans, Nashville, Connecticut, Allentown. So six shows left.
Wow, and two hometowns.
Yeah.
That's gonna be crazy. How's it feel when you go back? Well, Nashville's your new home, and then Connecticut, when you go back to Connecticut, how does that feel like? Besides everybody calling you for tickets.
Well, here's the funny thing is I moved from Nashville to Eastern Pennsylvania in October. So I've got Nashville and then Connecticut where I grew up and then Allentown, PA, which is close to where I live now. So my guest lists for those shows are going to be pretty stacked.
I would imagine so. That's right. I forgot when we were in Nashville that you and your girl was talking about you coming this
yeah.
way.
Yeah, I'm living over in Lancaster now with the Amish.
Nice. Yeah, it's peaceful.
I love it. I was ready for a change, and the Nashville of 2021 is not the Nashville of 2005 when I moved there, and it's just become this weird touristy destination, and I kind of had my fill there, and I don't really need to live there. You know, I don't work enough in Nashville,
right?
And especially now with, you know, when I'm not doing the Doobie thing, you know, damn near any session I do is remote. So yeah, it's nice to be back closer to where I grew up and with my lady having four seasons instead of two.
And you have enough chaos on the road, so you need that peace and quiet when you get home.
Exactly.
Yeah, I know, I hear you. So let's take people back. for those who don't know, and just to remind you, you know, I became a fan of Ed's back when he was playing with the band called Vertical Horizon in the 90s.
Yeah.
Let's talk a little bit about, I mean, I know you guys had a number one record. You had a couple of hit albums. And was that your first taste of stardom, kind of? Or?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, you know, I joined that band in 96. I'd been a year out or a couple of years out of college at that point. And they were looking for a drummer, and they were very much an indie band. You know, they had made a couple of records. One was just an acoustic duo record, and then the second one was still sort of acoustic based, but they had a rhythm section on it. And the drummer that just happened to play on the majority of the record was this guy you might have heard of called Carter Beauford. So I was like, all right, I could, you know, I liked the tunes. And, you know, I love Carter's playing style, and I was like, okay, I can play this stuff. Let's see what these guys are all about. You know, I found out about the gig from a friend, Jason Sutter, actually. Yeah. I don't know if you know Jason. He's been playing with Cher lately. Yeah. I knew Jason in Miami when I was in college, and, this was all going down in Boston. This would have been 96. And they had asked Jason if he wanted to do it, and he was busy doing other things. And I ran into him at a Vertical Horizon gig in Boston. And Jason told me, and he knew I was looking for a gig. And he said, hey, man, you know, they're looking for a drummer. They had a guy at the time, but he was, he didn't like the road. He didn't like being on the road.
People find that out. You know, they think the road is just nothing but, you know, fun. They don't realize it's actual work.
Yeah, it's not for everybody, man. It really isn't. And so this guy was a good drummer, and Jason knew him from Jason did his bachelor's at North Texas. So he knew this guy from North Texas. His name escapes me for some reason. I only met him that one night. But yeah, Jason said they're looking for a drummer. So I talked to one of the guys that night, and that led to setting up an audition, and I got that gig. So we were indie for a couple of years, still sleeping on people's floors and in campgrounds and stuff. And then we signed with RCA, and we put out the Everything You Want record, which ended up doing really well.
Yeah. Selling
a couple million records. And we made a follow-up called Go, which unfortunately not a lot of people heard, because the record company had sort of fallen apart. Yeah, totally different people. So the whole team was different, and, you know, amidst some of that chaos, some things started going on with the band too, and basically it was staring down a year of 05 of not really doing anything. And I had just had a kid, and you know I wasn't getting songwriter publishing, and so if we weren't working, I wasn't making any money. So it was like, you know, if we're sitting at home this year, I'm going to go find something to do. And that's when the Doobie audition popped up.
Yeah, because I know you went right from Vertical Horizon right to... tell us how that all came about.
So Michael Hossack was...
It's been like 16 years now, right?
It's 16 years, exactly 16 years, yeah. So I had met Michael Hossack, original Doobie drummer, who played on China Grove and Long Train Runnin', Listen to the Music, all that stuff back in the day. I met him during the Vertical Horizon thing because he was a fan. He was a Vertical Horizon fan, which was really cool. And I got to know Mike and became friends with Mike. And what had happened was in early 05, somewhat out of the blue, other Doobie drummer, Keith Knudsen, passed away. And I think he had contracted pneumonia or something. And his health was a little frail, and unfortunately it got him. But a couple of months later, they decided they were going to keep doing the two drummer thing. And Mike called me up and asked me if I was interested in the gig. And I said, yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I didn't think for a second that I was going to get the gig. It was an invite audition. They didn't do a cattle call or anything like that. And, you know, I'm 20 years younger than those guys. And, you know, there were some named guys invited to the audition, and guys that they knew that they were friends with. And so I just took it really lighthearted. I mean, I prepared because I wanted the gig.
You were a fan, right, growing up?
Yeah, my parents were fans growing up, so I knew the music. You know, I had the records in my house. I knew the music. I became a fan. I mean, the first time I saw him, I think I was 8 years old. You know, my parents took me and my brother down to Hartford Civic Center, and we saw the Doobie Brothers. And
wow.
We would sort of see them year after year, you know, because back then, well, I mean, bands now are on the road year after year. But back then, bands were on the road year after year promoting a new record, you know. So, yeah, it was during the sort of Michael McDonald years that I got to see the Doobies in the 70s. I wrote a letter to the fan club when I was 11 years old. It's pretty crazy.
You still have it?
No, I wish I did. You know, I after I joined the band, I asked the manager if he kept any of that stuff. And of course, they didn't, you know. But I remember being really disappointed because I poured my heart out in this letter and said all the naive stuff that a kid would say, like, you know, come over to the house. My mom will make you dinner. You know, you know, I know all your stuff. Maybe I could sit in on a tune, you know. And I got back this letter that was basically like, dear fan, you know, and then we got your letter. Thanks. We get a lot of letters. Sorry, we can't respond to them personally. And then at the bottom, like an order form for T-shirt. And it was such a disappointment because, you know, years later, when I was 14, I wrote a letter to Neil, to Modern Drummer. And I still have to this day a handwritten postcard from Neil Peart, you know. So getting this form letter when I was 11 was one of the sort of first disappointments of rock and roll. I tease the guys about it now, you know. But yeah, man.
Yeah, I actually go in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame with all their other stuff.
I know, right? So I, you know, I prepared for the audition because I was serious about it because I wanted the gig. But mentally, I think I was a little more relaxed about it because I just didn't really think that I was gonna be their guy. You know, like musically, I figured I'll be their guy, but like, oh, you know, they got this guy auditioning and they've known him for years. And, you know, so I just kind of, got rid of any kind of butterflies or whatever, you know.
Which was good because you were relaxed and.
It was great, man. And I'm like, all right, I'll go out to California and I'll be in the Doobie Brothers for a half hour and it'll be great. You know,
right.
I get to play these songs with those guys and it'll be a cool story to tell at parties or whatever, you know. And I got the gig, man.
Nice. Yeah, cool. Well, you know, and like you say, Michael was a fan, so he already knew you could play. You know, he obviously liked your style, and he, you know, and you know, Vertical, you know, the band was, when they had that first album, I mean, that was a really good album. You know, you were the real deal. Everybody saw you in concert. Everybody heard you on record. So it's not, you know, that's, what better audition for someone, you know, than that, something like that?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, so I, you know, they knew that I had done touring and stuff like that. I wasn't just this kid, you know. I mean, shoot, looking back now, I think I was 35 when I auditioned for the Doobies. So, you know, it's a long time ago, man.
they kept you all these. And now, well, Michael's back because it's the 50th anniversary tour, right? So Michael's back out.
Yeah, Mike McDonald's out with us this year doing the 50th anniversary thing. And, you know, I know we've got stuff planned for next year as well. The dates that we weren't able to reschedule this year, we're doing next year. And so yeah, obviously he'll be a part of that and everything. So, yeah, it's been great having him on because now we get to do, you know, when he's not around, we really just do, we only do Taking It to the Streets.
Right,
it's the only Michael era song that we play when Mike's not on the gig. Because, I mean, that's such a unique voice. It's hard to, you can't just say, oh, we'll just have so-and-so sing it. It's like,
right.
You know, Streets is a little different. The guys, there's a big group chorus, you know. Mm-hmm. And our bass player and Simmons will sing it. They'll trade off verses together when we do it. But to have him on and to be able to play stuff like Minute by Minute and What a Fool Believes and it keeps you running. And it's just really, really great, man. And on top of it, he's a great guy. I don't know if you've ever met Michael or not.
Actually, I interviewed him for a different view a couple of years ago, many years ago in Modern Drummer. And then I saw him a couple of years ago when Michael McDonald Toto show, we hung out for a little bit. I love Michael.
Yeah, he's a super sweet guy and a very funny human being as well.
Yeah,
always got a joke to tell, and he knows how to tell it, man. He's one of those guys that starts telling a joke and you're a mile away from the punchline and he's got you in stitches, like, you know. So so the whole thing, you know, despite all the COVID protocols and all that stuff, the whole tour has been really, really fun. You know, we had to cancel a few shows a few weeks ago because Mike came down with COVID, actually. But, you know, we rescheduled that stuff and onward and upward, and we test every show day. So, you know, we know we're walking in negative. So
thank God. Yeah, I know. It's a shame. I thought by now, I hate to keep bringing it up every week in the podcast. It comes up somehow because you can't ignore it. But I was hoping, you know, I wrote my editorial 8 months ago thinking, okay, this is the last time I'm going to have to mention this. This is like, let's move on. And it's still, you know, there's nothing we can do except wait it out.
Yeah.
Everybody's got to stay safe. That's all, you know?
Yeah. So, yeah. So hopefully next year we'll be sort of.
Yeah, back out on the road.
More so back now, to normal and doing the thing.
Before you go out, do you do any warm-ups? Because like some guys, they do warm-up. Some guys, they just go out and play.
No, I mean, I do a bit of warm-up. I stretch, you know, I stretch my arms and my back. You know, nothing monumental, just you know, a little 5-minute, 10-minute stretch thing. And then I'll stand at my road case with a pad and play some old drum corps stuff just to get the hands moving, the arms moving and all that. On this particular tour, the set is paced in such a way that I've got one sort of intense tune up top, but the front part of the set's a bit on the mid-tempo side, so I can sort of do the rest of my, I never go up cold. I just don't. So I do a little bit of warming up before I go up. Yeah.
And how is it now with you've done it before, I think 2 years ago, right? Just you as the only drummer without double drumming. And now Mark, how long has Mark been in the band? Mark Quinones.
Mark Quinones has been there since 2018, playing percussion. And I started, it was two drummers all the way up till 2016. And about midway through 2016, it just went down to one drummer. And they've just kept it that way. And I'm glad they have. I mean, double drumming was fun to a degree. Because in this particular band, you know, it's not like we're doing the King Crimson thing or anything like that. It's basically two guys out there playing the same thing. And, you know, I just never felt it was necessary for this band to have two drummers with that stuff. I think it was a 70s thing. I think it was more of a visual thing.
Yeah, and back then it was rare too. You had the Allman Brothers, you had the Doobie Brothers, but really it was, you know, it was cool. Like you say, it's visual wise, and of course double drums always gives that impact. But if you're gonna play the same exact thing, you know, then
It's just a nightmare for the front of house guy. You know, so, you know, we weren't doing things like the Dead or, you know, even Butch and J-Mo and the Almonds, you know, one guy would kind of hold it down while the other guy kind of decorated and maybe played some jazz or something underneath, you know,
particularly, well, there's an art to double drumming as we know.
For sure. So when it went to just me, I felt like I could breathe a little bit better. Musically speaking, it just kind of opened it up. Like, okay, we didn't have to worry about, okay, he's doing that fill, I'm doing this fill, we're doing this fill together. I could just play, you know? And right. I mean, as everybody knows, the less thinking you have to do when you're playing, the more organic it is. And so when they started talking in 2018 about maybe beefing up the rhythm section again, I kind of very loudly said, like, let's get a percussionist. And let's get a percussionist. Let's not get a drum set player who's looking for a gig or one of the guy's girlfriends with a tambourine. Like, let's get a legit percussionist. And I brought Mark's name into it because I knew he hadn't been doing much because Greg Allman was sick at that point.
Right.
And you know, those of us who knew that he wasn't going to be going back on the road. We had Mark down to, we did a couple of rehearsals we had been off for some time, for some months. and we were down in Florida, which just happens to be where Mark lives, to do a corporate event. And we did a couple of days of rehearsal before the event, because we hadn't played together in like 5 or 6 months. So he came down to the rehearsals and played with us, and he did the corporate event with us, and he's been there ever since.
Is that the first time you guys played together?
I believe so. Yeah, we had toured together because Doobies had done some stuff with Greg and with the and
right,
with
the right.
Long time ago, but we had never actually played music together. Yeah, so we knew each other like socially. You know, I knew him enough that I had his number, and and that was the first time we played together, and it was just an instant lock, man, because he knows exactly what to play, what not to play.
He's like, as you say, he's a real percussionist.
He is. I mean, you know, his background's in salsa music. Yeah. So, growing up in the Bronx and playing salsa is his background. And then he was in Spyro Gyra for some years. And that's where Butch Trucks saw him, was with Spyro Gyra. And he joined the Almonds on Butch's invite.
Wow. He was in the Almonds for a good number of years.
30 years, man.
Yeah. Yeah. Because I remember even when he played the festival back in the day, he was already playing with the Allman Brothers.
Yeah, yeah.
He's a great
fit with us musically and personally. So yeah. That's been working out really, really well.
Yeah, he's a nice guy. He's good to get along with. And we always stress that to people, you know, the up-and-coming guys, that you could take five guys. They're all going to be great. But if you have an attitude, you automatically, now it's down to four. You have an attitude, it's down to three, you know.
Absolutely. I tell kids that all the time. You know, if it's down to you and one other guy and that guy plays better than you, but he's got a little bit of an attitude, like, you're going to get the gig.
Mm-hmm.
That will be the number one thing that gets you the gig.
Yep.
And I think that helped with the Doobie situation. They knew, like, you know, I'd been on tour buses and whatnot. And
right. You were experienced. You toured. You were on the. You did the whole thing. Actually, just worked out perfect how one thing ended, and then thank God that went right into that.
And it's weird because it's Vertical didn't even really end. I just sort of moved away from it, and then the bass player left shortly after me, and. So now Vertical's just Matt.
But. Yeah, and when I did some research, I saw something about Neil Peart played on a Vertical Horizon.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the record after.
I never
the
knew
record
that.
After me. So what happened there was Matt Scannell is the lead singer and songwriter for Vertical Horizon. And Matt had become friends with Neil somewhere in there. They had a mutual friend that connected them. It's really weird. I think Matt, if I remember the story correctly, Matt had gone over to take some pictures of a car that Neil was selling for this guy here in Dallas, actually. I think that's right. And Matt and Neil just kind of hit it off as people, and they became very good friends. So after I had left, Matt was working on a new record, and Neil had gave him, I think it was at Matt's request, Neil had given him a couple of lyrics.
Right.
For some stuff. And Matt said to him, he said, look, you know, I have to ask, you know, if you wrote the words for these songs, like, you have to play on these songs.
I never knew this.
And Neil said, oh, I don't think anybody else could play those songs, so I'll do it. You know, so he ended up playing on a couple of tracks on that record. And I think he might've played on a track or two on the record after that as well.
Wow. Yeah. That completely surprised me, because I never read it. I don't remember it. I don't like, so that was Neil kind of replaced you.
Yeah. It's funny. You know, I used to get calls from my friends that were basically like, hey man, did you see who they had to get to replace you in Vertical Horizon?
And I never knew Carter Beaufort was in Vertical Horizon before you.
Yeah. It's weird. I've had this weird dance around people, you know, and Carter was never in Vertical, but he played on that record.
Right.
It was right about the time Dave Matthews Band was starting to take off that Carter played on that record, which was called Running on Ice. And so I ended up kind of following him in that band. I followed Keith Knudsen in this band, who, you know, was, I played all that stuff growing up as a kid. And then Neil kind of, I mean, he didn't follow me into Vertical Horizon, but he ended up playing with Vertical Horizon after I left. And it's, The world's a funny place, man.
Yeah, well, it's cool. I like the way it happens when you meet this person, that person, you wind up with this person because of that person. I love it.
Yeah, it's great stuff. And I know you're close to Ringo. We did a charity event out in Sonoma, California, a big concert for people. It was a fundraiser, and Ringo said any and all doobies on stage for the encore with a little help from my friend. So
nice.
To this day, I have yet to meet Ringo. We just did the Jimmy Kimmel show with him like 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, I know. That was a really good performance. And he was there, which I was surprised. So I thought you guys were going to hook up.
I was kind of hoping we would do a little something. And I didn't, again, with all the COVID, like,
I know
this dressing room's over here and that dressing room's over here. And, usually at the Kimmel show, there's a big mingling room in the middle of it all. And they kind of had all us sectioned off and all that.
Everybody's
so,
in a bubble.
No big deal, man. I got to play Shaker and sing with Greg with a little help from my friends that night out in Sonoma. So that not a lot of people have been on stage with the Beatles. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah, that is very cool.
Yeah. So, yeah, man, so, world's a small place.
The new record. Are you on the new record? You're on the new record.
I do not play a note on the new Doobie Brothers record.
You don't?
I do not.
So who plays on the record?
I honestly don't know. I think if I'm not mistaken, Victor and Drizzo's on a fair amount of it. I hear a couple of the tunes. Sounds like maybe Kenny is on it, but
wow.
I haven't. It was one of those things that they made during the pandemic. John Shanks produced, and it was one of those situations where they basically let the producer call the shots.
Yeah, we all know, producers have their people that they're used to working with, and then everything's remote. I'm sure everything with the tracks was sent all over.
Yeah,
but I was surprised, but these days it's so hard. That's why I feel bad for the younger generation. I mean, even the Doobie Brothers are the Doobie Brothers, but that album came out one day and then you don't hear about it anymore. There's no liner notes. So I couldn't even, I wasn't sure if you were on it. I only heard a couple of songs.
Yeah.
But,
I've looked for liner notes too. Cause I've been kind of curious as to.
The younger generation, they don't care. When we were growing up, that's why we bought records. I learned about so many artists because I bought every record that Jeff Beccaro was on. And then I learned about so many artists that I would have never known about if I didn't buy that record because Jeff Beccaro was on it.
Yeah, man. All this useless music trivia that I have, like where records were recorded and who the engineer was. And it's from sitting there reading the credits while the album's playing, and not stopping and going back and reading them again and again and again,
Yeah.
I mean, I was that kid. I would see like engineered by so-and-so and I'd be like, what's an engineer do on a record?
Right.
So I would go research that and find out that, what does a producer do? I mean, I was just ridiculously way into it when I was a kid. So
my generation, your generation, and then a little bit of that, the next generation before you. But then now this generation, they don't even care.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's sad.
So, I mean, they made the new record the way they made it. It sounds good. There's some good tunes on there. We're playing a couple of them during the live show.
Okay.
It's a little bit of a disappointment to me that I have yet to play on a Doobie Brothers record. I mean, I'm on a live thing that they put out. We did those shows at the Beacon Theater and they put those out, which is cool. And, who knows, man, maybe they have one more in them. And if so, if I do end up playing on a Doobie record, great. And if not, it really doesn't matter to me at this point, man.
You have to write the next hit for them.
Well, that's it, Say, hey, I'm not giving you the song unless you let me play on it.
Unless I play like Neil said.
Like Neil, yeah.
There's only one person who can play on this song. It's got to be me.
That's right. That's such a minor complaint in what has been a really, really great ride with these guys.
Yeah, and you know what? You can't take it personally because, like you say, everybody has their way of recording, their way of doing things, So, you take it personal because you feel like, well, I could have did that, but it's not personal.
No, not at all. And, I wouldn't even say I take it personally. Like, there's that one little moment when, you know, when I heard like there's a new recording. It's like, oh, okay. And then I just get on with my life.
Right.
It's all good, man.
Yeah.
It's all good.
All right. And, let's talk.
And I'm a side guy. You know, it would be one thing if I was a band member.
Right. I was just going to say, you're a hired gun. You're an important hired gun, but you're a hired gun.
Exactly. And yeah. So as a hired gun, I do what they ask me to do. Yep. They didn't ask me to play on the record, so I'm not playing on the record.
It's a job, right? It's a job. It's a gig.
Exactly.
That's the other thing that the younger generation don't understand. They'll answer back, and then, you know, they're fired after a week of being on tour with somebody because they don't know how to take care of the business part of it.
Right.
So, yeah. Let's talk gear a little bit. I know DW, you've been a DW guy, right, for how long?
Long time, pretty much since the late 90s. Yeah, I've got one of their Purple Heart kits out with me right now. I've used it for the last couple of tours that we've done, and I love it, man.
It's beautiful, too.
They are gorgeous drums, but the sound is really magnificent, and the snare, it's one of a few wood snares that I've played. It sounds like I'm playing, if you close your eyes, it almost sounds like a metal snare, like a Black Beauty type kind of thing, you know?
Right, right.
But I can't say enough about it. It's really, really good stuff.
And Don and John, I mean, they're, you know, they're amazing.
Oh yeah, they're great guys. And Scott,
Garrison, and everybody there.
John Good's one of my favorite people on earth, man. You know, and I get these great texts from him. Like, you know, I texted him to see if he wanted to come to the forum. We played at the LA Forum a couple of weeks ago. And I texted him a few days before, reminding him about the show to see if he wanted to come. He literally texts me back, I'll be in Michigan on a wood hunt.
And he's telling the truth.
He's going to hunt for wood, man. He's going to look for some kind of wood that nobody's ever made a drum out of before, you know.
I'm gonna pull wood out of the ocean that's been soaking for 1,000 years.
Yeah, I mean, who even thinks that kind of stuff, you know?
Yeah, no, he's a genius. So, he's a genius when it comes to that.
Yeah, something else.
And so, symbols still Zildjian, right?
Still Zildjian, and mostly the same symbols, man. I mean, not the exact same symbols, but the same models. I mean, you know, I've always looked at the kit as an instrument, as a singular instrument. And, you know, when I put my hand over here to hit a drum, I'm looking for a specific sound. When I go to hit a crash cymbal here, I'm looking for a specific sound. I'm looking for a different sound when I go to hit my crash cymbal over here. So it's all very specific.
Hey, Ed Toth from the Doobie Brothers here at the Memphis Drum Shop playing a 22-inch K custom medium ride. And you can buy this very cymbal over at mycymbal.com.
To me. And it's kind of been the same for years for me now. K custom fast crash, a couple of A customs, an A custom projection crash. I've used the 20-inch K hybrid ride for about 5 years now. It's funny. I went to do a thing at Memphis Drum Shop for Jim, where you play some cymbals and you know.
That vault is amazing.
It really is. When you can order them, you know, I did the videos for them. Like, you know, you can. Here's what it sounds like. You could buy this cymbal on mycymbal.com. You know. And that's when I first heard a K hybrid ride, and I immediately started riding on it, and I stopped, and my drum tech was there with me, and I looked up at Jeremy and was just like, and he was just nodding his head like this, like, you know, because he knew I was looking for something different in the ride department at that time. So that was immediate, which was great. I've got some kind of prototype that either Jim McGathy or Paul Francis gave me some years ago. It's some kind of crash, but I'm not sure what, because I don't know that it ever became a line.
Right.
And I'm just, I have it at the very end. So when I do like a Tom run and I can come down and just hit this really sweet 19 inch crash that kind of explodes and then just really goes away almost immediately, you know? And I live in fear for the day that that cymbal cracks.
Yeah.
Because I don't think there's another one.
and now Paul's not there anymore, Paul Francis. So,
very disappointing, yeah.
Yeah, well, we're not going to get into the politics of any of that.
Nope. But yeah, and then, you know, a couple splashes. I've always loved the A Custom 12-inch splash. I've always had one right up over here. It gives you that splash thing without being sort of too splashy, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then my favorite hi-hat combination for... I don't know. As long as they've been around, I have an A Custom top and a K Master Sound bottom. And it's just a killer combination.
I saw a clip of you with John Cowan.
Oh, yeah.
And I know you guys have a project together that you were doing, because when you did your On the Beat a while ago, you had just Button. You was just starting that project.
Yeah,
I saw a video of you guys playing Roxanne.
Oh, that was from, we used to do this thing in Nashville called the Nashville Drummers Jam. And what it was like, it was an event we'd have once or twice a year where basically the guys that were running the event would choose a drummer that we would sort of honor. And everybody would learn a tune that drummer played on. And it was like a charity thing, like all the money went to
local
charities and stuff. And there'd be like a house band and all that, and all of us Nashville drummers would get up and play different songs. And that was from the Stuart Copeland.
That was his tribute, kind of.
Yeah, and so that's what, and I roped Cowan in to sing it, because that's not an easy song to sing.
No, he did a great job on the.
John's got that high tenor voice, but yeah, he and I and a guitar player named Keith Howland, who's in the band Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
We used to all be neighbors,
and you went on tour together, didn't you guys tour?
Yeah, the Doobies have done a lot of touring with Chicago. Yeah. And it turns out that Keith lived right up the street from me, and of course Cowan didn't live too far, so we used to get together. We initially got together and put together like a sort of a cover band, and the goal with the cover band was just to play songs that cover bands generally don't play. Mm-hmm. So we're playing like Badfinger and stuff like that, you know.
The cool stuff,
exactly. And basically, as happens, you know, we just started jamming around in the basement. And I remember one day we didn't even play any songs. We just kind of jammed around for a couple hours and then split. And then either later that day or the next day, I got an email from Keith that had an MP3 attached to it. And the email just said, "I think there's some songs here." And then he had some time markings, like, because this MP3 was like an hour and a half long, you know. So I went to where he had marked the stuff, and he was right. There was some cool ideas there. So the next time we got together, we sort of worked on it, and we ended up making an album's worth of tunes. We came up with a band name, Button.
Why not? Yeah. And so you co-wrote.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we all decided just like it was just going to be an all in, you know, everybody's credited to everything kind of thing.
Why not?
That's really kind of how it came about, you know. And so that's out there on the streaming services and all that, if anybody's interested. And it's got some great stuff on it. It's got, we brought in a few different keyboards, Billy Payne from Little Feet, and now from the Doobies. Payne's been playing with the Doobies for the last almost 10 years. He's on a track, Jeff Babko from LA is on a bunch of stuff, and Butch Taylor, who was in Dave Matthews Band for a little while, is on some tracks as well.
Yeah, people should check that out.
It's a fun little record, man. It's a fun little
record. It is. I remember when you were doing it. It's good.
Cool. Yeah.
So yeah. One thing. Do you electronics? Are there any electronics on stage, or hybrid triggers or anything? No.
Nope. Not at all. Everything's to a click. So I have a little pedal that tells the guy to start the click, and off we go.
So and you have in-ears, right?
Yeah.
In-ears. So what do you like? What do you need to hear? Do you have your own control over your mix, or
the monitor guy does it for me? I generally like to feel like I'm listening to a record, like playing along with a record, like we were when we were kids.
Right. You know? That's the great thing about in-ears. Yeah.
So I don't pan my kit. It's all dead center. And I, basically have a little bit of everything in there. I will back off or eliminate some stuff that I don't totally need, like maybe some background vocal stuff or, some keys stuff that I might not need on a tune that's more guitar driven.
Yeah, and it muddies it up too.
Yeah, I'll back off some of the guitar stuff. You know, all the Mike McDonald songs are very keyboard driven, so I'll back off on some of the guitar stuff on that. But it's great now, I remember when in-ears first came out, it was like you got your mix and like that was the mix.
Right.
Now I got now we get the mixes are they're tune by tune, you know.
That's so, it's a great thing, the in-ears, and you don't have to. You know, the monitors are not blasting in your head.
We all remember those days. I mean, I remember playing in a horn band, and I had a three-piece horn section to my right, all my cymbals, and a monitor tower, like, to my left. I mean, you know, it's no wonder we all have tinnitus, you know?
Yeah, I know. It's like, and everybody's got the little hearing aids now. It's like...
Absolutely.
Well, I'm gonna if you don't mind, I'm going to bring in a friend of mine. I'm going to pop him in. He's a big fan of the Doobie Brothers, and we go back a pretty long time. We just reconnected recently, but he's a famous radio personality, DJ. He was on some of the biggest stations here in WPLJ, WKTU in the 80s, and Hot 103. I mean, all these top stations. He was one of the top DJs here in New York, and he's an actor. And he loves music, and he loves the Doobie Brothers. I'm going to bring on Al Bandiero.
All right.
Hey, guys. How are you?
Hey, Al.
Very good. Nice to meet you, Ed.
Al, that's Ed.
Nice to meet you as well.
And Billy and I go back, as he said, a long way. You know, I was listening to you chat about your audition. So may I ask a couple of questions?
Yeah, absolutely.
Absolutely. Okay.
So... do they tell you before you go in what you're going to audition on, what particular songs?
In this particular, let me rewind a little bit. So the Vertical Horizon audition, they did not. It was basically, you know, these are the albums and come on in and we'll play some stuff together. Mm-hmm. And the cool thing about the Vertical Horizon audition is the first thing they did was they said, we have this new thing we've been working on, would be curious to see what you put on it. So they just started playing a song that I had never heard before that they were still working on. And I think they were just trying to gauge, like, because, you know, anybody that can play can learn a tune. Right. I think they were trying to gauge where I was at in the creativity department, you know, how I heard this particular music that they were writing. And then we went through a couple of songs from the albums and stuff like that. The Doobies was sort of, I got a list. I got a copy of a live record that they had put out the year before, which was called Live at Wolf Trap. And it was like, here's five songs, learn the arrangements from this Live at Wolf Trap CD.
What were the songs?
Oh man, you're going to make me remember.
sorry.
That's okay. I think it was pretty much the hits. I think it was Listen, China, Long Train, which had a sort of extended arrangement.
Was Jesus on there?
I don't think Jesus was on there. You know, I have the actual note that they sent me in a box somewhere.
Wow.
I'll have to look it up. I think Take Me in Your Arms might have been on there. But, you know, I over-prepared. I learned all the arrangements from the whole live album instead of just the five tunes. And, you know, I knew a lot of their material anyway from playing it along growing up. And so this worked in my favor because at one point in the audition, Tom Johnston called a tune. I can't remember what it was. And McPhee jumped in and said, oh, that's not on the audition list. And I said, it doesn't matter. I know it. Let's play it.
Very cool.
And so we played it. So, you know, I've always been a proponent of being over-prepared for auditions. Yeah.
It shows that you did your homework too.
Yeah, exactly.
So take me back to you get the gig, your very first concert with the Doobie Brothers. Where was it?
My first concert with the Doobie Brothers was a corporate event in Singapore.
Okay. Wow.
I'd never been to Asia. And there I was.
Where was your first concert with them? Meaning
when we got back to the States after that, my first concert, I believe if I remember correctly, was in Utah.
Okay, so take me back for this moment, if you would. The house lights go down, people are ready, and you're about to start playing drums for the first time with the Doobie Brothers. Mm-hmm. Can you remember what went through your mind the moment it started?
You know, it was just exciting. It was a little nerve-wracking because it was like the first, you know, I mean, we had done the corporate thing, but that's always, those shows are usually, you don't play as long.
Right.
And you're not playing to fans per se. You're playing to people who know your music, but you're there as entertainment, basically.
Right.
This is a Doobie Brothers concert, you know.
Right. How many people roughly at that first show?
At the first show, it was an outdoor festival of sorts. So, you know, it's a few thousand people, you know. But I've been used to playing to crowds before, obviously.
Right. Because Vertical Horizon played some huge places.
Yeah, we played some big shows, you know. So, you know, being up there with my friend Mike, who's not only my friend Mike Hasek, but one of the original drummers for the Doobie Brothers, was like really cool. And, you know, playing these tunes with these guys, I mean, I had played them in bar bands for years. You know, and so that was a really kind of cool thing. And I remember feeling a little bit more charged after the gig because I'd gotten through it, you know, and didn't make any mistakes. And like, it went really well. And it was like, holy crap, I'm in the Doobie Brothers.
In the Doobie Brothers.
Yeah.
And that's amazing. And also for a long time. So yeah, kudos to you.
Yeah, Doobie drummer. So when the Doobie started, it was just one drummer, a guy named John Hartman, who was a founding member of the Doobie Brothers. They made
that's right. Yeah. Now you get my memory going now. That's right. He was
they made one record, which was just called the Doobie Brothers. It didn't really do much of anything. The second record is when they started doing the two drummer thing, and that's when Michael Hasek came in. So it was Michael Hasek and John Hartman. They made the Toulouse Street record, the Captain and Me record, and What Were Once Vices Are Now Habits. Great 70s album title, by the way.
Yeah.
So right before the touring, or right during the touring of Vices, Michael Hasek decided he had enough and he split. And that's when Keith Knudsen came in. And so it was Keith Knudsen and John Hartman for the next few records. And then when they were touring Minute by Minute, or right before they started touring Minute by Minute, Hartman had left.
Now, was this when Michael came in?
Yeah, Michael McDonald's in the band at this point, had been in the band for a few years, and they brought in a guy called Chet McCracken. I don't know if you know Chet.
I don't know him.
LA guy, you know?
Yeah.
So Chet was in there for the last few years of that original Doobie run, and then they hung it up in 83. And then when the band got back together in the late 80s, it was the original lineup. So it was John Hartman and Michael Hasek.
Wow.
They made a couple of records, one in 89. They had a hit, The Doctor. Remember, Music is the Doctor?
Mm-hmm.
The big hit on the radio.
Yep.
They had an album after that, and then Hartman left again. And so Michael Hasek was still there. Well, the Doobies, they just brought back Keith Knudsen. So...
No wonder why nobody knows. It's like,
Exactly. There'll be a quiz. There'll be a quiz in a few minutes, kids.
This is good. Yeah, we should have a contest.
So it was Mike and Keith from in the 90s all the way up until Keith passed in 05. And then I came in. And then in 2010, Mike found out he had cancer. And
I met a doctor that night when backstage you introduced me to Mike, and then his doctor was there.
Yeah, and he got off the road in 2010, and we lost him in 2012. But and that's when Tony Pia came in. He had been in Brian Setzer's band.
Yeah, I'm sorry, Tony, that you know I'm not familiar. I'll look it up now.
So me and Tony did it for like almost like 6 years, just about 6 years.
Wow.
And then he left in 2016, and we just kept the single drummer thing. So
that's the
it's interesting to hear that because you're joining a band that is worldwide known.
Yeah.
And there has to be those butterflies before you do it. But I would think that because it's such a physical thing on the drums, that also helps you get that out where, you know, you're not bottled up.
Yeah. You don't have to sit there and try to make 10 fingers do different things. You're just you can put that energy out.
Yeah. So. There's a physical thing and you already had experience, but then you're going up into the level of a band like the Doobie Brothers. Obviously I was watching a video this morning, somewhere, I think it might've been Indiana, but, it was somebody real close and it was on their phone and you guys did a great job. You know, it was just watching my favorite on the drums and watching guys play is Jesus Is Just All Right.
Yeah.
Because I don't think, and I'll be the first to admit, there isn't a guy that hasn't played air drums on Jesus Is Just All Right. and if they deny it, they're lying. Yeah. So you watch that over and over again, and you have that in your head. And I just wondered, what was that like, you know, to get up? Because Billy's allowing me on, which is appreciated, because my first movie, Rocky IV, is coming back out in November with all new, with different scenes, some taken out. But I remember going down. That was my first film. It's like you going up on stage for the first time.
Yeah.
And man, you're nervous. You know, you're. These guys have been doing what they've been doing for a long time. And then you get this shot and, you know, you're close to changing your underwear before you come out of the dressing room. And you sit there and you get to a point where I'm sure it happened. We think it happened. When you're ready to go, it's either you sink or you swim.
Yeah.
There is no middle. It's either you're going to do this well or you're going to die. It's one of the two. So.
And that's it. You know, you just sort of tell yourself, you know what, man, just go out and have fun.
Yeah, exactly.
And we'll have a blast. And you know what? And then we'll do it again.
Yeah. Isn't that what life is supposed to be all about now? Life is supposed to be about having fun. I think the pandemic taught us that. Time, who you spend time with. And life is short, man. You better make every day fun.
Absolutely.
And I think it's who you're with and who you're not with is equally, important today. And, especially with 50 years, you guys are, that's the 50 years, right?
Yeah.
And Rocky IV is, I think, 35 or 36. And years ago, it came out. We're going to come out again. And it feels like it was last week, you know, that we did that. But I think part of this is that people go back to a time where they were having a great time, whether it's listening or visual. And I think that's why a lot of these classics get back out there again. You know, when I go on YouTube and I'm reading a script, I always listen to music while I'm reading. I always do. I'll pick. And for me, I always go back to a certain period where you were just rocking at that time of your life. Maybe you didn't have too much money in your pocket, but it brought back great memories.
Absolutely.
And music gets into your bones. You know, with a movie that you do, you have to watch it open up and get to the point, get to the middle of it, see the end. Music, the first 2 seconds for me has always been, okay, crank this one up. This is good. So I think that as people are going out, and I'm sure you guys are sold out, and now we're anticipating on November 11th for this movie to come out. As you look around, theaters getting sold out. So you wonder, I know you've seen this film 1,000 times, but it's just something, I guess, about going back into a theater to see it the way it's like, let me put this album on again, even though I've heard it a million times, that it just never gets old.
Yeah.
That's the stuff, you know, that touches your heart, that leads
absolutely.
Well, listen, we got to, I would love to keep you guys all day long, but we got to wrap this up. So I appreciate you both. Al, thank you for
stopping. Thank you.
Rocky IV, November 11th, right?
Rocky IV, November 11th, worldwide.
And Ed, just before we go, I know we had spoke about you wanting to get in more into producing. Is that still, you still thinking about that?
Well, producing is something I did during the tail end of Vertical and that I still do from time to time. So, you know, if anybody thinks they want me to produce their thing, give me a call. I think I do a pretty good job at it.
I think drummers make the best producers. A majority of people that do produce play the drums. They may not be drummers, all drummers, but they play the drums.
Well, you know, the drummer's like a catcher on a ball field, man. We need to know what everybody's doing.
Right. You see
the where everybody's going and how everybody's going to react. And when you know that stuff, it makes it it puts you in a better position to steer a song or an album in the right direction.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah. Well, I thank you guys so much, everybody.
Thank you.
Billy Amendola here, Modern Drummer Magazine, and we'll see you next time on the Modern Drummer Podcast.
Bye-bye, guys. Thanks. Be safe.
See you.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful, fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.